This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Still ahead, historian Gary Wills looks at the future of the Catholic Church 2 years after the election of Pope Francis.
Right now, we check in, as we always do on Wednesdays at this time, on what's happening this week in Congress.
Susan Davis is with us. She's chief congressional reporter for USA Today. Sue, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this letter written to the leaders of Iran by 47 Republican senators. Most of them just signed it. It was authored by Tom Cotton, a first-term senator. What were they trying to accomplish with this letter to Iran?
It was sent on Monday. It was sent to the Iranian officials who are involved in what we call the P5 plus one negotiations, which are the six countries currently involved in attempting to negotiate a deal with Iran to cease its nuclear program. Tom Cotton is a very ambitious freshman Republican senator from Arkansas, and he led this effort in which he says a letter to Iranian officials that says, sort of warning them, saying that any deal that President Obama strikes may only be temporary, because if it's an executive decision, it would not necessarily be withheld or updated with the next administration, that the next president comes in could change their mind on the terms of the deal. And Democrats really saw this and cast this as an attempt to undermine the president at a very intense time of negotiations. They're facing a roughly March 24th deadline to show progress on the framework for a deal. And top Democrats, including Vice President Biden, Secretary John Kerry today was on Capitol Hill. Hillary Clinton addressed it yesterday in her press conference, all said that they thought that this was sort of an undermining action of a commander-in-chief. So it's really inflamed tempers on Capitol Hill, particularly around the issue of Iran and any kind of legislative efforts to move forward on that. But in terms of impact, it hasn't, you know, we're not necessarily sure where it's going to go, but it has certainly, you know, further pushed the divide on Capitol Hill.
Well, looking now at the annals of congressional history, is there any precedent for this kind of intervention by Congress, by senators, in the role of, high-level negotiations like this that are taking place between the president and another nation?
Well, you know, with most issues, it depends on who you ask. Democrats, John Kerry testified this morning before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He obviously is a former senator and served on that committee, and he said he viewed it as unprecedented, said that executive-to-executive agreements are part of the foundation of this country that goes back to the earliest parts of American agreements with foreign countries. In the opposite view, Senator Jim Risch, who is a Republican from Idaho, who's the number two Republican on the panel, said obviously the senators have a right to voice dissent, and that they view this as more akin to a treaty, which the Senate does have a constitutional right to vote up or down. This is not a formal treaty. What the president is doing will unlikely require congressional approval or disapproval, although there is action afoot in Congress led by Bob Corker, who's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. They'd like to pass legislation that would give Congress a 60-day window to review the terms of any deal the administration reaches with Iran. The White House, of course, has said they would veto that bill, particularly if Congress moves forward on it before the negotiations are concluded.
Well, one message from this letter seems to be that these senators would like to be more included in these negotiations. Is there any sense in Washington whether that's legitimate?
You know, I think whenever you're the party in the opposing party of the party in power in the White House, you'd like to have more of a seat at the table. I'm not sure that there is a tremendous amount of precedent for any party relying on the minority in Congress to negotiate what are essentially international executive agreements. So I think that their interest in being at the table is sort of a common viewpoint held from the opposing political party, and regardless of who's in power in the White House.
Well, let's talk about what they were suggesting, that this could, whatever agreement was reached, could be thrown out with another president. And as you said, this sort of rests on whether or not this is an executive agreement or this is a treaty. So can you talk a little bit about what the difference would be?
Sure. I mean, it's obviously not a treaty because a treaty has a formal process. It does require Senate approval. What Senator Kerry was saying this morning is that presidents, since the beginning of the Republic, have negotiated international agreements that do not necessarily need approval or disapproval from Congress. I think why the Iran issue has created a different kind of debate is because I think that particularly members of Congress see what is happening in Iran and what their actions in the region as one that rises above to a level of national security that should involve congressional input, particularly if the agreements fail and Congress seeks to enact more sanctions on Iran, which is certainly a role that the legislative branch would play in this. An example that John Kerry used of executive agreements is that past presidents have negotiated the equivalent of an executive agreement on how troops are treated internationally and certain standards by which we've reached international accords. So this is not a treaty. It's not being treated as a treaty, but I think that the Senate is saying in the particular instance with Iran, particularly with the threats that they pose to the region, to national security, to Israel, that they feel that this needs to be a fully vetted, understood deal by lawmakers who may not agree with the terms of it. We don't entirely know what the terms are going to be. This is not a very transparent process. This is, nor are any diplomatic negotiations. Part of the nature of these talks is sort of the privacy of them, and I think that part of what Democrats have voiced defense to is they're saying that Republicans think that the president is not taking Iran seriously, but they don't fundamentally know what they're talking about. They don't know what's in the substance of the deal, and they don't know what kind of verification provisions they're trying to seek. And the administration is pushing back and saying, you're saying our goal is that we're not being strong enough on Iran, but there is no doubt that the end goal is to absolutely prohibit a nuclear Iran. But we'll have to wait and see. There's a lot of skepticism that this March 24th deadline is going to produce an actual framework for a deal, and whether Congress at that point decides to move forward with new sanctions is going to be a very interesting test for this Congress, particularly as there are many Democrats who agree with Republicans that more sanctions could be necessary.
Well, just briefly before we leave this topic, is there any sense yet about how this letter could impact or tip the scales in any direction?
Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid was asked that question yesterday, that if he thought that the letter would change the way Democrats may view future actions on Iran. And he quite candidly said no, he didn't. And I think part of that is while a lot of Senate Democrats, the ones that would have a vote, while they may be offended by the tactic and by the timing, there is a lot of substance by which they agree with, in, particularly in terms when it comes to whether they would have to vote on further sanctions, whether Congress should have more of a ability to review what the deal is. I mean, there is some element of Democratic support for those ideas, even if they don't like necessarily the way the Republicans have handled the message of it this week.
Meanwhile, you reported today that John Kerry told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee that it's time to update the authorization for use of military force. What is he looking for there?
So the administration, President Obama, submitted a new language for the authorization for the use of military force last month, and it would be specifically to destroy the rise of the Islamic State, the group that we also refer to as ISIL or ISIS. This is the first major hearing we've had on the AUMF since it was submitted to Congress, and I think what was really striking today is it underscored how hard it's going to be to get this through Congress. I think particularly because the administration says they legally have the authority to do this, and the mission is already underway. We are currently engaged in Iraq and Syria to defeat ISIL, and that the reason why they're seeking this vote is they think it would be clarifying, and they think it would send a unifying message, but that it is not necessarily, it is not legally necessary. And I think that's a really hard case to make, to ask lawmakers to take a very tough vote politically that their own, that the White House is saying that they don't even think they need. Democrats raise concerns about putting tougher restrictions on how, when, and how many troops, U.S. troops, can be put on the ground. Lawmakers raise concerns about the fact that there's no geographical limits in it. We don't. It's not limited to Iraq and Syria. It's essentially they could take the fight to where they need to take the fight, which I think raises a lot of concerns on Capitol Hill. Senator Coons from Delaware, a Democrat from Delaware who took Joe Biden's seat, raised the issue of paying for it, noting that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have contributed $1 trillion to the national deficit, and prolonged wars have their own national security risk of contributing to financial instability in this country. So, you know, it was across the board. I think that, and Jeff Flake, who is a senator from Arizona, one of the Republicans who did not sign the letter on Monday, I should note, you know, raised the point, and he said, John Kerry said, you know, is it better to get no AUMF at all than to get a partisan, one-sided AUMF, for instance, if just Republicans voted for it? And John Kerry agreed with him and said no AUMF would be better than an ugly partisan vote, because it would contradict the message that the U.S. is unified in this fight. So I think it's a really fascinating political debate, I think, particularly because there's so many lawmakers that want to revisit this issue because we're still operating the war on terror under the 2001 and 2002 authorizations following the 9/11 attacks. So there's a need to update the policy, but in this specific instance, I think it's going to be really tough to find the broad bipartisan support the White House is seeking to sort of underscore the U.S. commitment to defeat ISIL. Even though I believe that commitment is there, it just, when it comes to the politics of such a vote, it's a very complicated path forward.
Any idea when there could be some movement on that AUMF?
No, and I think it's very notable that neither House or Senate Republican leaders have announced yet when it might be on the floor. So it's just sort of, it's floating out there as an issue with no clear timeline.
So moving on, the Justice Department is expected to bring criminal charges against Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey. If you could get us up to speed a bit on that, what are these charges stemming from?
The charges of what we believe, and there's been no indictment yet, but there is indication that the Justice Department would indict Senator Menendez in relation to his relationship with a top Democratic donor and a doctor that has been a longtime political supporter of his. And there's allegations that he used his position as a senator in particular to try and change negotiations with CMS, the Center for Medicare Services, on reimbursements to help his doctor friend, that essentially that he was using his power as a senator to give kickbacks to a business that to the doctor who receives most of his money from Medicare reimbursements. This is it's a fascinating issue. We have not seen the Justice Department go after any sitting lawmaker in quite some time. I think that the DOJ was very prominently embarrassed after the prosecution of former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens was thrown out for prosecutorial misconduct. So I think that there is a sense that the DOJ feels fairly strongly about their case, because if they were to go after another lawmaker without a very firm case, it could be very embarrassing for the department. Senator Menendez has insisted that he has done nothing wrong, that he's acted above the law, and that he welcomes the scrutiny. So it's hard to know where it will go, but it sounds like if there's going to be indictment, it could come down within the month. And it could really change. It's very interesting, because Senator Menendez is one of those Democrats who has been very critical of the administration's foreign policy on Iran. He's the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He's been a very prominent player in this debate. And if that indictment comes down, it's certainly going to diminish his ability to be influential. And it will also probably raise the calls for some that he should at least step aside from his leadership position while he is facing charges.
Well, Susan, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Susan Davis, Chief Congressional Reporter for USA Today. Each week at this time, we take a look at what's happening on Capitol Hill.